Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Thank you, everyone. We have a little housekeeping. I forgot to go back and do the minutes yesterday's meeting, so now we have two sets of minutes. So, Representative Kostin, would you like to move the minutes for the February 7th meeting? And both of these should be in your packets, members.
Madam Chair, so moved.
All right. Representative Kostin moves the meeting's minutes for February 7th. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are adopted. And Representative Marquardt, would you like to move the minutes for February 8th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Marquardt. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes from February 8th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much, members. All right, good. We're all caught up on the minutes. And with that, we have three bills on the schedule for consideration by the committee today. And as is tradition, a lot of committees, we will go with those members who are not serving on the Education Committee, so you can do your bills and be on your way. Representative Anderson, if you'd like to start. Let's see, Representative Erickson would move House File 255, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, I believe is the motion. And Representative Anderson, I did not receive any amendments, so I'm assuming you don't have any author's amendment or anything for your bill.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, very well. So please go ahead, and we welcome your testimony on House File 255.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And out of respect for the committee's time, I will be brief. This is not a new issue. Minnesota currently has K-12 education tax credit that we provide to families in the state. The tax credit itself has not been changed to reflect the changing economy. And so what this does is it expands the credit. And that's it in a nutshell, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Any questions for Representative Anderson? And I don't. Do you have any testifiers, Representative Anderson?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. So no testifiers. Representative Marchetti.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson. We saw this in Representative Erickson's committee, so we had a good conversation there. Just a couple of very quick questions. So the motion here is to move this to.
To taxes.
To taxes. Okay. So I know the tax committee will be asking this question, but we are a finance committee as well. So what is the expected cost of the changes in the credits and deductions here in this bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mariani. They do not have the revenue estimate done yet, but I can tell you this bill I had up last year. I'm just going to make sure I get the right one. Last year, they had the cost for fiscal year 2016 at $17.3 million, and for 2017,
$17.5
million. Representative Mariani.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Anderson. And then I keep mixing up your bill with Representative Crescia's bill, so I want to make sure. There's an inflation factor in this piece. I mean, obviously, I think part of your testimony was we had not adjusted these in a long time. And so I think there's an inflation factor in the bill. And, again, I might be confusing it. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson.
Rolling and built with inflation factor.
Yes. And we do have one of the nonpartisan tax staff here with us, Ms. Manzi. I don't know if would we like Ms. Manzi to walk through those particulars of the bill?
I can verify that there is an inflation in here.
Representative Anderson.
And Madam Chair, and so that's a perpetual inflation factor, right? Not just this one time.
Representative Anderson,
Madam Chair, and Representative Mariani, yes.
Okay. So Madam Chair, just very quickly, we've got an element like that with our special ed. That's sort of like the golden, grail, if you will, for many of us is to. Be able to make sure that the state is making an ongoing commitment to our public education systems. And so the big broad question is, and I'm not going to ask it to Representative Anderson, but I think the big broad question for us as we move forward, and if this bill moves forward, and we're voting for a bill that has an inflationary factor here, then we should definitely be open in terms of, I would argue, in terms of inflationary factor for our support for our public schools as well. So I just want to highlight it for the record, you know, that it's here, and expressing my desire to be consistent, if we're going to do that with this, to continue to do that with support for our public education as well.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Anderson, any comment?
And Madam Chair, just to be sure that I was clear, Representative Mariani, it is on the phase-out, not on the actual credit itself.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions for the bill author or Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, or maybe Ms. Manzi needs to answer this. How many more families will be eligible for the credit under this increase?
All right, I think why don't we have Ms. Manzi come forward, if you would.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, as Representative Anderson stated, the Department of Revenue has not yet prepared a revenue estimate for this bill. As she stated, a similar bill was introduced last biennium, and I'm looking at the revenue estimate for that in providing you with this information. And that estimate suggested that 67,400 taxpayers would be newly eligible for the credit. And then it went on to say that some taxpayers who are in the current phase-out range would receive an increased credit, and it doesn't say how many that would be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's very good information. Representative Anderson, how will this help families to allow for maybe an improved education or an enhanced education for their children?
Sure.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, this is expanding who would be eligible for it and also giving them a greater increase credit to help them maximize the educational tools that they utilize at home to help their children. I think when it comes to education, it's not just the school that educates the child, it's the parent, and there's a partnership. And I know my son's teacher always says, thanks for being a partner with your son's education, and that's how I view this, is parents partnering with the educators to do what's right for the kids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Representative Gaffney.
Madam Chair, a question for Ms. Manzi before she escapes.
You might want to just stay put, Ms. Manzi. Thank you.
I'm sorry I wasn't quick enough on the spot to jot down the numbers you just gave, but help me understand, of the people who would become eligible for the credit, how many of those are people who are currently utilizing the credit or could because of their educational choices, and how many would be new people who would, you know, magically come into the process?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Davin, Representative Anderson's bill does two things. One is that it increases the dollar amount of the credit from $1,000 to $1,500, and then it increases the income level at which the credit begins to phase out. So there are some taxpayers who are in the current credit phase-out range, which starts at $33,500 of income, and then where it ends depends on how many children you have for whom you're claiming the credit, who would receive an increased credit because the phase-out would instead be starting at a higher income level. It would be starting at $50,000 of income. So if you were at, for example, $35,000 of income, you would be eligible for the full amount of the credit, which would now be at $1,500 instead of $1,000. So you may currently be getting a credit that's subject to the phase-out, and now you're going to get a larger credit. In addition to that, taxpayers who are currently above the phase-out but who have incomes less than where it would start to phase-out under the change in Representative Anderson's bill are going to be newly eligible for the credit. Now, we don't have a revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue for the bill. The estimate from 2015 tells us that at that time, the Department of Revenue estimated that 67,400 additional taxpayers would become eligible for the credit. And then it also goes on to say that an unspecified number would receive an increased credit, and that's of those people who are in the phase-out range currently.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Manzi.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those represent Daphne's questions were my questions, but now I have another one. Would you repeat that? 67,400 new families would be coming on board in, as estimated in 2015?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. And I anticipate that if this bill is heard in taxes, the Department of Revenue will prepare a new estimate, and that number may be somewhat different, but we should expect it to be similar.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, final words, Representative Anderson?
I just ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Anderson. All right. So Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 255 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
All right. Motion is approved, and House File 255 is on its way to the Tax Committee. Thank you, Representative Anderson. All right, next we will move on to Representative Knobloch's bill, House File 387. And all right, and Ms. Manzi, you may want to be ready to come forward if need be as well. All right, so let's see, Representative Peterson, would you like to move House File 387 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. All right, so we have your bill before us, and I did not have any amendments for you, Representative Knobloch. All right, so hearing the bill as presented, and with that, please go ahead and make your comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 387 does three things. Number one, it updates the existing education tax credit and tax deduction for the inflation that has taken place since they were last updated. Number two, it puts in place an inflator so the tax credit and deduction income limits are automatically updated each year since it has been 20 years since they were updated. And finally, it makes private school tuition, which has been eligible for Minnesota's education tax deduction since 1955, also eligible for the education tax credit. The existing education tax deduction was enacted in 1955. Private school tuition has been covered by the education tax deduction since 1955, in addition to the other education costs that are covered by the education tax credit. Currently, families can deduct up to $1,625 for each child age K through 6, and $2,500 for each child grade 7 through 12. This deduction is available to even the highest income taxpayers in the state. Millionaires in Minnesota are currently getting a deduction for private school tuition here in Minnesota underneath the tax deduction. However, because of the progressive nature of our tax system, this deduction is virtually useless for lower income taxpayers. And so this bill does, as I mentioned, update the amounts to reflect the 50% inflation that has taken place since they were enacted. The existing education tax credit was enacted in 1997, and I'm pleased to have with me today someone who will testify in a few minutes. That is former Representative Leroy Copendreyer, who carried the education tax credit bill in 1997. This tax credit provides a refundable 75% credit right now of up to $1,000 per child of parents of public, private, and homeschool children, but it starts to phase out at an income level of $33,500. It currently covers a variety of public, private, and homeschool expenses, such as school supplies, computer software, tutoring, music instrument rental, etc. Unlike the education tax credit, however, it does not cover, right now, private school tuition. This bill increases the amount of the credit to $1,500 and adjusts the income qualifying level up to the $50,000 level to reflect the inflation that has taken place. This also makes the expenses covered by the tax deduction and tax credit identical, so low to lower middle income families can now get a tax benefit for private school tuition just like high-income families can get right now. Lower-income families who send their children to public, private, and homeschool will all benefit from the increased tax credits and deductions in this bill. This bill corrects the discrimination we have against low-income families in our current law, in which we provide a tax deduction for private school tuition that only benefits high-income families while denying a tax credit for that same purpose to low-income families. Madam Chair, I have two testifiers, Jim Bartholomew and former Representative Klippendreyer, and if you could, I'd like Mr. Bartholomew to come forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Knobloch. And Mr. Bartholomew's on his way. Welcome. If you please just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and Representative Knobloch is clearly saving the best for last in terms of testifiers. So I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 387, and in particular, the education tax credit provisions in Sections 2 and 3. We believe updating both the income eligibility and the tax credit amounts is appropriate, especially given the fact, as Representative Knobloch mentioned, it's been nearly 20 years since those amounts were last set. These updated amounts will help low-income families support their children's education by improving their ability to provide tutoring services, instructional materials, and music lessons. We also encourage you to expand the eligible uses of the credit by including tuition. By including tuition, we can help equalize the ability of all families to choose the school they believe will best meet their children's needs. Choosing a school that you're going to send your son or daughter to is an important decision, and finding the best fit for them will play a key role in determining their success. As you consider this bill, we'd ask that you think about it through the eyes of a family, specifically a family that can use financial help to either supplement their child's education or select a school that they believe is best for their child. House File 387 will not only help individual students, but our educational system as a whole. Thank you, and we'd ask that you support House File 387.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. I think when we call down former Representative Klippendreyer, he's here. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bartholomew.
Representative Murphy, would it be okay if Mr. Klippendreyer is the final testifier for Representative Knobloch's bill in favor of it, and then we'll go to questions, and then we'll take other testifiers with concerns.
All right.
Does that work for you?
That's fine with me. Okay. I want to see my friend.
Yes, we'll make sure that Mr. Bartholomew does not go anywhere. Thank you. I think we've got him blocked in up there anyway. So, welcome, Representative Klippendreyer. We just had a chance to meet you and I before the meeting, but I understand you, obviously a member of this body from 1991 to 98, if I have my facts correct.
No, that's correct, ma'am.
97. Very good.
Along with a few others that are still here.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy, Representative Mariani, and Representative Norris.
Excellent. Well, we're glad you're here, and if you would please just offer us your testimony.
Thank you for having me back. I think I had a handout, and I intended to hand out just the numbers behind, but I had some notes with it, and I thought it wouldn't hurt to hand them out to save time. And I hope that when you consider this bill, it's easier than it was the last time when we did it for the first time, because it took a special session in the summer to get it passed. I really appreciate the school choice scarves. We didn't have school choice scarves the first time we did that. But just a little bit of history. From 1971 to 73, Minnesota had a refundable tax credit. That was challenged, the constitutionality of that was challenged, and it went as far as the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a case that was brought by, of all places, the state of New York, that it was constitutional. Other litigation that followed It was determined that Minnesota, this issue was also constitutional. So the question of the constitutionality of the deductions and credits was brought up over and over and over for good reason. It was litigated, and it was found to be legal. The question then was how it would be applied and how much it would cost. When this bill was first, when I introduced the bill the first time, I could take a step back. The first thing I did was introduce a voucher bill. And just to give you some history, I was the only vote for my own bill. I hadn't done my homework, so if you ever do that again, do your homework well, because that would be a good effort. But the deductions and credits in the bill was, let me back up. The reason that the credit for tuition was dropped is not because of necessarily because of cost. When I carried this bill, we were deep in the minority, and there was political differences of opinion, and there still is. But the governor vetoed the education bill, and I negotiated with the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate to come to an agreement, and in that agreement, so that we could get bipartisan support for the bill, was we had to drop the deduction and we had to drop the credit for tuition. That was dropped, and that's why that's not in there now, and that's why it's back now. And because as a low-income family, without a credit for tuition, the amount of money available was very little. If you look, I think you have a handout, if I could speak to the deduction, because the deduction, it's often brought up as to how much money it will cost. I just heard some of the numbers. And I might add, somebody questioned the number of families that would be added to be 65,000. I think that has to be also remembered. This applies to public education as well. If you've got expenses in public education that's expendable and qualifies under this bill, you can get that deduction if your child is in public education. That additional 65,000 families is not possibly the number of private education, because there are only 80,000 students that are not in public school. So just to clarify, that's a lot of that number applies to children that are and families that have that are in public school. If you look at the handout for the deduction, and
Madam Chair, there's no handout. I'm sorry, Representative Klobuchar, it wasn't included.
Oh, I see.
So if you have one to get to the committee, we'll make sure that committee members get that, but we did not receive that.
If I could just go over quickly on the deduction, because what is said and what I struggled with the last time was how much it was, and now the deduction is raised to a maximum of $3,900 for 7 to 12 and $2,600 for K through 6. If you take a family of a family of two children, which is typical with children in school, that makes $100,000. They get a $16,000 family deduction. Then they get a $15,000 itemized deduction, or if they don't itemize, they get a $12,000 deduction. But that leaves a taxable income of $69,000. At 7% tax rate, they have a tax bill of $4,800. If they deduct two children, one $2,600 and one $3,900, that deduction amounts to $455. So a family of two children gets $227 taxed bill tax deduction on their taxes under this bill as it's presented now. So the benefit isn't something huge for the typical family. The typical family, as Representative Knobloch talked about, high income, but the typical family that's sending their children to private school in my district are less than $100,000. So the thing that I always am impressed with is that while it takes money away from education, if my grandchildren who now go to a non-public school, if this next spring, next fall, they decide to go to the public school, just on the education formula alone, it costs $5,961. It costs $6,188. But of that, if they go over here to the private school, it only costs the budget $227. So how much are they taking away? They're not taking anything away. They are leaving over $5,000 in the general fund budget because they attend private school and don't go to the public school. The children don't disappear, and the state revenue stays the same. So all the children that go to private school save the state. 80,000 children right now that go to private school are saving the general fund about $800 million. That's indisputable. And that's something that's so often lost in this discussion. And it's really not, private versus public is really not a competition. I just got finished serving on the board of the private school. My father went there, I went there, my children went there, and now my grandchildren go there. It's been there 100 years. It goes through eighth grade. We work in conjunction with the public school on just about everything we do because the children go from the private school to the public school for high school. The public school uses our facility in the summertime for their summer school when they had construction in the public school. It's a joint effort for the children of the district or of Minnesota to educate their children. And the cheapest way to do it for the state budget is when they're in the private school.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Navarro?
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to thank Representative Poppenberger for his work on this when he was in the legislature 20 years ago and for him testifying today and for giving me one more argument I haven't thought of for this bill. Members, vote against a special session. Vote yes.
Great. Thank you,
Madam Chair. Thank you. Questions,
yes, and I know Representative Murphy had a question. Did you have any other testifiers in favor of your proposal?
No, I don't, Madam Chair.
All right, so now we'll move to questions to either Representative Copendreyer or Mr. Bartholomew. You might want to come down. And Representative Murphy, I know you had a question for Mr. Bartholomew, so you are up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bartholomew, in your concluding remark, you made a statement. I don't have the exact words, but can you give any specific examples of how passage of House File 387 helps the system as a whole?
Mr. Bartholomew.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, certainly the credits are going to help kids, public and non-public schools, just to supplement their education. And then to the degree that you have the credit for tuition, there have been a number of studies that looked at the impact of having broader options for low-income families on the district in which the schools they go to have generally found that the host district in schools improve as a result of, for lack of better words, increased competition for students. They begin to look at their course offerings and things like that and start to ask why are families leaving and what can we do to keep them. And that generally has, through at least three studies I'm aware of, shown that they've been able to improve.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bartholomew, would you mind forward me the one that you like the best of the three studies?
Mr. Bartholomew.
Madam Chair, could I offer a comment on that question also?
Yes, Representative Koppelmeyer. Dreyer, excuse me.
The credit for tuition, when the credit was removed to get the bill passed the first time, it was understood and we knew We did it to get bipartisan support. But what it did was create a bookkeeping nightmare for taxpayers and school administration, because you had to bifurcate what applies as tuition to what could apply as expenses in order to get a benefit at all. To give a credit for tuition now simply changes it so that simply you don't have to bifurcate this expense and this expense and this expense. It doesn't apply to tuition. What private schools had to do is say, this portion applies to tuition, and this portion is for, in an instance of a parochial school, this is for parochial education, and these expenses are not for parochial education and consequently qualify. It's a bookkeeping nightmare to take advantage of that amount of money that's available. To make it for the credit for tuition really simplifies the bookkeeping, and in fact, when it's all figured out and they get the results of it back and see what it really costs, you will find that the credit for tuition doesn't go up as much as you thought because they quit bifurcating how they do their taxes and how they do their expenses. I don't know if
I can. Yeah, to follow up on that, I've also seen private schools where now what they do is they break out their tuition and they say, well, this much is school supplies and this much is books and this as much is music instrument rental and this much is computer software. And these things are items that are eligible for the credit for public and private school students. And so students in private school are getting those credits, but as Representative Kuppenberger said, it creates much more of a bookkeeping hassle for actually not just the private schools, but the Department of Revenue as well.
Thank you. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Knobloch, as is often the case, the rhetoric around these bills is about low-income students. But the experience, for instance, in Arizona, which has had a tax credit program for, I think, a number of years, it may have been the first in the country, the experience there is that the vast majority of students or families taking advantage of the tax credit are middle and upper income families, not low income families. Can you speak to how you have structured your bill in a way that targets the credit for towards low income families?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, basically the credit starts phasing out at $50,000 of income. The exact amount it phases out at depends on how many children you have. But I don't think anyone would say a family that's making $50,000 is a high-income family. And so I don't know what the income limits are in the Arizona program and how that works. But just by the way this is written, high-income families aren't going to qualify for the credit. They already qualify for the existing deduction.
Representative Dabney.
Just one more question from Representative Knobloch. Americans for Prosperity, Minnesota, not surprisingly, support your bill. And they state that their frustration with current law, as they say, is under current law, the education tax credit can only be used for public school tuition. Can you comment on their statement?
Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, Representative Debbie, I actually don't know who that is, but when you say, could you repeat that sentence there?
I left off the signature page. I'm sorry. But quote from Americans for Prosperity, Minnesota, under current law, the education tax credit can only be used on public school tuition. And that's their basis for supporting your bill. Can you comment, please?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I guess I would say that's an inaccurate statement because right now the education tax credit can be used by low-income families who go to public, private, and homeschool, but it can't be used for private school tuition. It can be used for these other things I talked about, like school supplies, music instrument rental, things like that. And so I guess I don't know that group. I haven't talked to them. They haven't talked to me. I guess I would say that statement as it is isn't accurate.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Something we can agree on. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Kuppenberger and Representative Knobloch, did you say that we should be reducing the bookkeeping and that was would be a good thing. Passage of this bill would reduce bookkeeping because, and you didn't use that this word, but I'm using this word, because then we would be decreasing transparency.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, right now you've got a different standard for what qualifies for the education tax deduction versus the education tax credit. And because of that, you've got private schools that are saying, well, you know, if you look at our tuition, some parts of it are for things like books and school supplies and such that are eligible for the credit. And so they're carving those out and telling their parents about them, and they're getting some of that credit. And so if we just made the items that qualified for the deduction and the credit the same, the bookkeeping would be easier for everyone. It would be easier for parents, it would be easier for private schools, it would be easier for the Department of Revenue.
Representative Murphy.
But, Madam Chair, would the taxpayers be able to go back and look at the records and find out what their money is buying?
Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, if I can just ask you to clarify your question, Representative Murphy, are you talking about the taxpayers who qualify for the credit or taxpayers in
ordinary general? Taxpayers that are looking at the school's budget, would they be able to, with this clarification and less bookkeeping, would they be able to tell where the money is going for?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, none of this money goes to schools. It all goes to parents. So there wouldn't be any records at schools for any taxpayers of any kind to look at. What you would have is you could talk to the Department of Revenue and get an estimate from them of how much of the credit, if it was an act, that is going to pay for private school tuition versus people in public school expenses. You could get that information, but none of this money goes to schools. It all goes to parents.
Right. But
Representative Murphy.
But the original question was to kind of clarify what Mr. Bartholomew was saying, that passage of this bill would strengthen the system as a whole. And I don't see that the system as a whole will be strengthened if we're reducing the bookkeeping and can't follow what the school system as a whole is spending on education.
Well, Madam Chair, I think you can still find out easily how much money was being spent on this program. So if you're wondering, for example, how much money the state is spending on education, you could look at the education budget and this program, and I guess if you wanted to add them together, you'd be able to get that number.
Me.
Representative Murphy.
I'm going to leave this now, but I will want to see that before.
Other questions? Representative Mariani.
So, I'm Chair Representative Knobloch and my classmate, Representative Copendrive. It was good to catch up with you earlier. I listened carefully to your testimony. I've had a number of issues, you know, with this approach. I don't support, would that surprise you? I don't support the use of tax credits to cover the tuition of private schools. However, just to pick at something, you were testifying earlier about this issue of separating textbooks and what a problem that is for the schools, et cetera. And it seems to me that at least as I understood your testimony, the way it actually works, you know, in terms of the ability to even separate tuition costs from religious materials that are used in a private sectarian school, it seems to me that there's a built-in conflict in the language before us. Clearly, the language that exists in statute goes very clearly identifies that books that are books and instruction, special books and materials used in the teaching of religious tenets, doctrines, or worship, the purpose of which is to instill such tenets, doctrine, or worship, is not, is not a permissible, use for the tax credit. And yet, if we're covering, and so clearly, we weren't going to cover the tuition. And I'm not so certain, by the way, that the court has been clear on this issue of Minnesota's tuition, because it's sort of a chicken and an egg, or a cart and a horse thing, because, we didn't put out a bill with tuition for the court to challenge. And so I think the whole issue of whether or not it's constitutional to cover tuition with tax credits, which I will argue are public funds, is that it's created through a public action of revenues that the public otherwise would have. That seems to me that's a big hurdle to jump over in terms of separation of the church and state. But back to my question, if we're covering tuition, aren't we, in terms of how schools structure their operating costs, which if they're sectarian schools are going to include religious materials, aren't we kind of backdooring our way into using public funds through the form of tax credits to cover religious materials? Aren't you worried about that? Maybe. So it's two questions, Aren't we doing that? And maybe I'm misunderstanding it. And two, should we be doing that? And I guess that question is more for you, Representative Ablett.
Well, sure, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, I guess, what I understand happens right now with some private schools, they send their bill to the parents and they say, well, here's the portion of it that is non-religious books that would qualify for the credit. Here's the portion that's school supplies. Here's, maybe some other things that qualify for the credit. And then here's tuition that currently doesn't qualify for the credit. So the parents actually can get some benefit for the credit if they wish. Now, there aren't any schools I'm aware of that are that have a tuition of only $1,500, and so, all of them are, certainly somewhat higher than that. So if there's a concern about religious books somehow being covered by the credit, if there were somehow schools out there that only had tuition of $1,500 and no charges, other charges, I guess that might be an issue, but that's not the case. So there's plenty of other room and tuition to pay for other religious books that would be covered by those religious schools. And as far as the constitutionality goes, I know there was a U.S. Supreme Court case in 1983 that actually upheld Minnesota's tax deduction at that time that did cover private school tuition. So we already had a U.S. Supreme Court case that dealt with tax deductions in Minnesota for private school tuition. The tax credit hasn't been litigated, but we've had it for 20 years otherwise, and since we've already got the Supreme Court case covering a tax deduction, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I would think there's a pretty good case that it would cover the tax credit too.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, like you, Representative Abelak, I'm not a lawyer either. However, I do recall language from that case where the court expressed concern that if it had been a tax credit, that we're talking a whole different animal here. And I think it's important for us to have a real good sense of what's going to happen here and not just push out legislation that invites that kind of potential action on the part of a court. I suspect this will get litigated if, in fact, we do move this forward. Something you might want to also consider that in terms of a fiscal cost, to this body, to this state, in terms of moving this forward. But back to my question on the textbook, the second part of that, is it the intent of the author to have religious textbooks or materials covered through the use of a tax credit as structured in this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, no, that's not my intent. And recalling that case you talked about, I think one of the concerns in that case was a 100% tax credit where a family would potentially get back 100 cents on the dollar of what they spent. But the tax credit we have in Minnesota is a 75% tax credit. So you only get back 75 cents on the dollar of what you spent. So again, if somehow someone said, well, some of that tuition actually did go for religious books. You're not getting back 100%. You're only getting back 75%. And I think part of the reason for that is that you can plausibly argue that that 25% would more than cover whatever other religious books are involved, if in fact we're talking about some sort of religious school at all.
Representative Mariani?
Well, Madam Chair, I won't take this any further. I just think it's really important that we're real clear that we're not covering religious materials and instruction with any public funds, no matter what form that gets there. It's really important that we get that on the record.
And Representative Mariani, Madam Chair, I am happy to state that on the record that it's not my intention that this tax credit would be covering religious books.
Great. Thank you. I think what we should do, because I know we had folks who wanted to testify with concerns about the bill, so we should let that testimony come forward, and then if we have additional questions, we'll go to those. I just want to make sure we give everybody a chance to be heard who would like to. So I've got a number of people, and I'm not sure which bill you want to testify on or if you're testifying on two bills before us today. Okay. So I'm just going to go in order that I have you on the list, and if you want to push back your testimony to the next bill, that's your choice. Gary Amoroso, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, would you like to comment now or next bill? Okay. Scott Krumquist. Next bill. Okay. Grace Kelleher, next. Or is there anybody who wanted to come down to testify right now? I know it's about 387. Okay. All right. So we'll just take it all with the next bill then. Any other questions? Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. So right now, out of the general tax fund, the funds for education, we pay for private schools' transportation costs. We pay for the nurse, school nurse.
Yep.
We pay for special ed services. Do we pay for English language learning services? Because I wasn't sure about that one. I was sure about the others.
Representative,
I'm not sure, but we actually do, I know, also pay for some books, for non-religious books.
Well, I was getting to that, for textbooks.
All right.
Transportation, school nurses, special ed services, and textbooks. I'm having a really hard time since we fund from the public schools these items, how we're going to do this credit thing. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it. We're already funding quite a bit.
Well, Representative Knobloch.
For all kids that are in the private schools, not just wealthy, but, you know, poor kids too.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Slocum, I mean, in terms of how we can do it, if you're speaking to the practical aspect of it, I guess I would say we're already doing it. We have a tax deduction for private school tuition that's been in effect since 1955, and so we're doing it. The Department of Revenue has long ago figured out how to properly determine who gets the deduction and who doesn't get it. And given that, I don't think they'd have any problem doing that for the tax credit either. And, I mean, in terms of those items, you're right, private schools qualify for them, but they are a very, very small percentage of the total amount of money that the average private school receives. I know they are certainly appreciated, but that is only a very small minority of what the average private school receives.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Maybe this is for Ms. Mansi. Do we know what the cost of this bill yet? Or Representative Knobloch, do you know what the cost would be?
Representative Marquardt, Madam Chair, I don't have a revenue note on it, but I know I had a very similar bill 2 years ago, and the cost of that was around $26 million a year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knobloch, we had a little bit of discussion earlier in taxes on deductibles and credits and kind of the accountability of things. You know, I look at, you know, this list right here that in our spending that has all the various line items on all the various programs, and we, you know, certainly scrutinize this every couple years when we go through the budget. And yet we know with tax expenditures, tax deductions and credits, once they're in, there's not a lot of oversight afterwards. And I'm just, yeah, I mean, one of the big concerns in our education system is really the accountability and so forth. So you have ideas of, you know, this would be a cost and a tax expenditure. How do we still stay accountable for those dollars? Have you got some thoughts on that? And because I think that's important that we have some accountability still for those dollars.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I guess I'd say two things. First of all, in the Department of Revenue, I think when this first was put into place, really spent a lot of time figuring out just how to do this and how to get it right. And I think it took a fair bit of work, as I recall, years ago. But they have long ago determined how to do that and figure out, you know, what qualifies, what doesn't. So I'm confident that they know what they're doing and are doing their best to make sure that people are not getting credits and deductions who are not entitled to them. Beyond that, I would say that certainly, as with any credit, and the discussion we had in taxes earlier today, I think it's fine to look at them and examine them. But the people who are ultimately accountable here, I think, are the parents. The parents are still shelling out money to the school in order to educate their child. And if they're not happy with the performance of the school, they're going to hold the school accountable and probably leave that school, maybe go to a different private school if it's a private school, maybe go to a public school or homeschool. So we have actually probably more accountability here than we have with most tax credits.
And I'm sorry, we have a group of students, and I forgot to mention them, and then now they have to leave. So I just have to note that we were happy to have some students from St. Agnes High School in St. Paul who are here with us, observing committee, and thank you. We're always great to have students here since we're talking about things that directly impact your education. So I'm sorry, Representative Knobloch, to interrupt. But
No, I'm glad you recognized them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Knobloch. And I do think, not just in education finance, but probably some of the other areas like in economic development. You know, there's a legislative audit report coming out on the R&D credit today. And I think maybe into the future we start pulling some of these tax expenditures out in kind of all the committees where there's things that are kind of related. I think it would be a good review. I really do. I think it might be, you know, more transparency and so forth. That just gets me thinking with this bill in education that it could really apply kind of all the finance areas to kind of start taking those pieces out of the tax code that kind of go without a lot of oversight. That would increase transparency and make sure that dollars are getting the results. But thank you.
And Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, as I know you know, but other people should know too, there is a tax expenditure book that is published by the department annually, I believe, that goes through all the tax expenditures and, you know, what they're for, how much they're spent on, and so forth. And it's you know, it's good reading.
Yeah,
it's good reading. Good bedtime reading, maybe,
yes.
But it's good reading.
Yes, those of us on the tax committee look forward to that gleefully every year, so thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair and Representative Knobloch, if religious texts are not covered and not part of this, how do we stay out of the weeds in your bill regarding staff, like, in a school that also double as religious leaders, maybe a priest or a rabbi or somebody else like that, that not only is there in maybe a leadership capacity but also an admin capacity?
Representative
Knobloch. Well, Madam Chair, Representative Sandstead, the law, as has been on the books since 1955, allows a tax deduction for high-income families for private school tuition. And so, you know, if there's a priest that's teaching, a rabbi that's teaching, we're not necessarily saying they're teaching religion. They might be teaching, and probably more likely are, teaching some sort of secular subject in a lot of these schools. But we as a state have not said there's a problem with someone who is religious teaching, and the Supreme Court has upheld the tax deduction that exists, so I don't see that as a problem.
Representative Sandstead? Any other questions? Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I want to pick up on a little bit of Representative Marquardt's question. He was talking about accountability frame relative to the finances and the proper application of the tax credit. But again, seeing as we're expanding this now to cover tuition, Tuition is the delivery of instruction, which is vitally important to us as a body. We have state standards of expected student outcomes that are to be delivered through public tuition to accomplish important goals that, you know, maintain and sustain, you know, us as a viable and healthy state. And in order to make sure that that happens, we have an accountability system. We have a reporting system. We have our schools informing us through the executive branch, the Department of Education, how they're doing relative to accomplishing those outcomes that are state standards, things like, you know, what the high school graduation rates are. We even have further expectations. We have due process expectations, you know, of how those schools, and again, they're using public funds, so that's appropriate to have that accountability, how those schools conduct themselves relative to their relationships with students, with the people who work for them, even to some degree with, you know, how they relate with parents. We have a fair pupil dismissal act, for instance. We expect our schools who are receiving public funds to not discriminate against students. We have a relatively healthy framework in our state of human rights that we strive mightily hard to hold schools to a fair treatment of students and families. So we have this entire accountability and reporting system. Should we not have that same accountability and reporting system for private schools that are now going to be the beneficiary of public funds through the form of a tax credit in order to cover their operations, which are paid for and covered in what's called tuition?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, again, we already have the state tax deduction that has been in existence since 1955 covering private school tuition. So we've been doing this longer than probably a lot of people in this room have been alive, and I haven't heard complaints about it. But, you know, if we want to get into discrimination, I would go back to talking about the discrimination we have in our tax code right now, where we say that we're going to give this benefit to high-income families, but we're not going to give a benefit to low-income families. High-income families who can get a tax deduction get this benefit for deducting private school tuition right now and have been getting it since 1955. But because of the progressive nature of our tax system, the tax deduction isn't worth anything to lower-income families. A tax credit, however, is. And so this bill eliminates that discrimination within our tax code so that low-income people now can get this benefit.
Representative Mariani.
Representative Knobloch, you and I have served together for a couple decades. You're very good at what you do. I'm very good at what I do. You know, we'll sometimes pull out our floor speeches where, as you know and I know, even though there's important things that happen on the floor, it's also a place where we just attempt to shape the public narrative. This is a committee hearing. I'm asking you in all earnestness this question. You didn't answer my question. You deflected from it. You raised up an issue about discrimination relative to the tax credit. I'm asking you point blank, you know, regardless of whether there have been practices in the past or not. You know, we didn't have an accountability system in the 1950s for our public schools either. You know, we didn't have the reporting systems that we have. There's a reason why we put those in place for our public schools. Now we're going to take a step to cover private school tuition, which is about the operations, the core functions of a school that's supposed to produce an important outcome that we all bipartisanly think is really important in order to make sure that we know that those resources are being used to meet that purposes. We developed an accountability reporting system. Should we not have an accountability reporting system for our private schools now that we're going to be able to cover their tuition expenses through the expansion of this tax credit?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, first of all, I do believe that we have discrimination within our tax code, and I think
quite
clear that we do. You know, I guess beyond that, we have allowed private schools to have a selection process for the students that they admit different schools have different processes. Some of them are religious in nature. Some of them are not. They choose those students and their admission criteria based on, in many ways, how the school started, how the parents in the school want the school to be conducted. In some cases, they're religiously based, and I think the parents feel like the students perform better because of those particular values. Other schools are secular schools, and they've got other values. But I don't think that we want to get into trying to change that. I think that we have seen a lot of success for many, many years by private schools in our state, and people wouldn't argue with that. If you look at tests that some of the students do take, Stanford Achievement Tests and so forth, I think that you would find overall they perform very creditably, if not better than the average public school student, although that I hesitate to say that because obviously you've got different populations. You've got to go through controlling for that sort of thing. But in any case, I think that you wouldn't have the parents bringing their students, their children there, if they didn't think that the school wasn't performing, and that's really the ultimate accountability. And unless we're going to now change the law and say that we're going to outlaw private schools unless they conform to every standard that public schools have, then I think we need to leave things in terms of the admission criteria as they are.
No, Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Chair, we could probably do this for a long time. I suspect if we get to the floor, we will. So I won't attempt to answer everything that you put up. Thank you. But, you know, I would say that the whole point for many of us is that if we're going to use public resources, that they should be applied uniformly, transparently. They should be the deliverer of those services should transparently report those outcomes, do that uniformly. The whole point of our democracy isn't to feed differences that are defined, no matter how it might be defined, religious or other. We concede that the people can do those things, but what we do say is that we don't expect taxpayers to pay for those exclusionary practices that might exist somewhere. So this is a philosophical difference, I suspect, that we have here, and that's fair enough. But that's really the point that many of us feel on this issue, that if we're going to use public resources, then they need to be used in the delivery of services that are truly equally, equitably applied to every single citizen and resident of the state, free of any particular religious or other, beliefs that folks might have. Even as we respect that they could have those beliefs, we just say you should then be able to use the public pot to be able to support that work. So, Madam Chair, I'll leave it at that. I suspect we'll have a fun debate as we continue to keep going forward on this.
I suspect so, Representative Mariani. Representative Erickson?
Just a final comment to remind members that we directly fund American Indian education for contract schools in the state. They do hold religious ceremonies. We directly fund those contract schools. There's no accountability, just so we have that on the record.
Yeah,
sure.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I can't let that go. Madam Chair, first of all, I want to thank the bipartisan support for the Indian schools. Some of the most egregious, struggling educational environments for young people in our state, and we all know the history behind all of that. And so, I think we came together to provide good support for that. I would caution us to equate Indian traditional practices with what we consider, through our Western lenses, our religious practices. I think all of us would do well to sit with our American Indian brothers and sisters to have a deep understanding of those practices relative to our practices. And so I do not want to concede that funding BIA schools is the same as funding a Catholic school in St. Paul, of which I have many, and they're great schools. I would submit that those are two different things.
Thank you. Representative Dabney, before I recognize you, members, I do want to note we have checked and room 5 is available after session. So if we don't finish the bills yet on our calendar, we will come back after session to finish. We've got a full agenda next week as well. So, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got a number of concerns about this bill. That's probably not a surprise to Representative Knobloch. The new one that has emerged here and the idea that we're going to take taxpayer money and use it to subsidize the salary of the local priest or rabbi or imam or nun or pastor if there's a school affiliated with their faith institution, I think is a clear, bright line that in the 220-some-year history of this country, we've said taxpayers don't pay the salary of religious leaders. And I'm deeply concerned about that. And given that, I would ask for a roll call when we get to the vote, please.
Roll call's been requested. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious for clarification purposes. Will parents who send their children to Muslim-based schools, will they also get the tax credit?
Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, Representative Slocum, as long as it's a private school that is properly licensed through the state, the answer would be yes.
Representative Slocum. All right. With that, Representative Knobloch, final comments.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, first to my friend Representative Dabney and Representative Mirana, you and I have talked about this many times, and I appreciate your point of view and your question. To your comment and question, Representative Dabney, that this is somehow crossing some bright line and we're somehow subsidizing priests or imams or others, I would first say, remember, these tax dollars are not going to the schools. They are going to the parents. These are tax credits or deductions that are going to the parents. And we have had a tax deduction for private school tuition since 1955, and it has been upheld in 1983 by the U.S. Supreme Court. So I don't think there's any bright line that we're crossing with this bill, in all due respect. And members, otherwise, let me just close by reminding members and informing new members that Governor Dayton's 2015 budget actually included a significant increase in the income qualification level for the education tax credit to $45,000, not so different from this bill, though not the private school tuition language. I would remind people that language practically identical to this bill did pass the House in 2015 as part of the tax bill. And members, I would hope that you would support adjusting these tax deductions and credits for inflation and adding private school tuition so that not only private and homeschool students, but public school students as well who qualify for this and their parents would be able to enjoy these benefits. And I'd appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Knobloch. With that, Representative Peterson renews her motion that House File 387 be re-referred to Tax Committee. Roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Jennifer Loon.
Aye.
Representative Peggy Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Jim Dabney?
No.
Representative Dario Anselmo?
Aye.
Representative Sandra Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Tony Jurgens?
Yes.
Representative Ron Crescia?
Aye.
Representative Carlos Mariani?
No.
Representative Paul Marquardt?
No.
Representative Rena Moran?
No.
Representative Mary Murphy?
No.
Representative Bud Norin?
Aye.
Representative Roz Peterson?
Aye.
Representative John Poston?
Aye.
Representative Julie Sandsted?
No.
Representative Peggy Scott?
Yes.
Representative Linda Slocum?
No.
Representative Dennis Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tama Tice?
Aye.
Representative Paul Tyson?
No.
Representative Adam Willis is excused. So it's 12 ayes, 8 nays.
All right. So The motion is agreed to, vote of 12 to 8, and the bill is on its way to Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. All right, Representative Kreisha. And Representative Kreisha, since we had a committee hearing, an informational hearing on your bill, we did not have possession of it. Here's how I would like to proceed. I know that you have an author's amendment,
mm-hmm.
So after I recognize you, I'd like you to present your author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like, and then turn to testimony, because I know we didn't get in all the testimony at the previous hearing, so we can get all that in, and then go to member questions and discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, so with that, Representative Kreisha, you are recognized for House Bill 386.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and I believe I have to move my bill.
Oh, yes, and Representative Kreisha moves that House Bill 386 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
And with that, I'll offer the A3 amendment.
All right, so members, the A3 amendment before you to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Do you want to briefly explain the A3 amendment, Representative Kreisha?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just briefly, there was a couple of things that, frankly, were drafting errors from last biennium when we tried to offer this, and also listening to some of the testimony in education innovation policy. So we've expanded this to make sure that we do what we intend to do, which is to include qualified charter schools as well as qualified public school foundation grants. And we just want to expand it and make sure that we're consistent with efforts that we've done in the past.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Any questions specifically on the amendment? Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, am I reading this correctly that you set a minimum threshold of 30% of the students qualifying for reduced price lunches?
Representative Kreisha.
That is, and I would ask Ms. Manzi just to be up here and be ready to make sure that I get it correct.
Ms. Manzi, did you want to comment or just confirm that?
Madam Chair, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department, Representative Dabney, the expansion in the amendment adds two things to the bill that was discussed earlier. One is that it allows the credit for contributions to foundations that will then make grants to qualified charter schools. And a qualified charter school would be a school at which at least 30% of the students qualify for the free or reduced lunch. The second thing is that it would allow the tax credit for contributions made to public school foundations. And a public school foundation is limited to a foundation that has as its primary purpose supporting one or more schools or school districts in Minnesota at which at least 30% of the students qualify for the free or reduced price lunch.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Ms. Manzi, thank you. You all notice how slowly and carefully she talks to me just to help make sure I understand what she's saying. I was apprehensive because we often in education talk about reduced and free and actually measure those price lunches students separately. We measure them separately. When I saw it only using the term reduced price, I was apprehensive that this was leaving out districts with large numbers of children who qualify for free lunch and a small number then who qualify for reduced. But I understand the language better now given your statement. So thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I do want to add that the amendment was drafted rather quickly, and I think that what you just described is Representative Kreisha's intent, and we may need to add some words to it at some point later in the process to, you know, to clarify that that's indeed what it's doing. But that's my understanding is that the reduced price is a higher income threshold, so you would have to have at least 30% of your students below the reduced price threshold, which would include those students who are eligible for a free lunch. And I would work with Mr. Strom and others, you know, as this goes forward to make sure that that's what's there, and Representative Kreisha could confirm that that's his intent.
That is correct. Representative Christian.
Thank you.
All right. So with that, a question is on the adoption of the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The A3 amendment now is part of House Bill 386. And with that, I'd like to call up testifiers just so we can make sure we can get in the folks who wanted to testify. So if you want to testify, please come forward. I do have the list that I started calling out before. Mr. Amoroso, Mr. Kroonquist, Ms. Kelleher, and then I also have Fred Nolan with MREA, Wintana Melikin, someone, Sarah McLaren, and Brad Lindell are those are the people that notified the committee in advance he wanted to testify. So just if all testifiers would try to keep it brief. I don't know if members would like to return after session, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. Representative Christian.
A very quick comment. All the testifiers, I want to thank them for the many people that have stopped by my office and had frank conversations. And it's very much appreciated, and I think it speaks to the character of this institution.
Thank you. Mr. Amoroso, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, mainly representing the superintendents in the state as well as other district-level employees. I want to thank Representative Preacher for a nice conversation that we had regarding the bill. And I just want to make a couple of points regarding the last two bills that we've heard. We always have the concern when we have the conversation about are we going to have something enacted in the state that will have public dollars going to private or parochial schools. And that's one that, not necessarily to the schools, but to parents or to whatever kind of support we're talking about. And that's something that we just want to have considered as we move forward. How far does the door get open? Does the door keep getting open? Our concern, of course, is that we have a limited amount of resources, and there is a cost associated with these bills. The cost may not be in the state providing resources. It could be a tax deduction or whatever. But that means there could be less resources down the road. And one of the concerns that I heard Representative Mariani mention that I would love to have a conversation with this committee or any other committee talking about how we can get the per pupil funding formula up to where it needs to be since 2003. We're 40% below that. And we have some bills that we're talking about that are moving up from where it would have been with the rate of inflation over the last 20 years. And I know that's not a possibility, but that concept is one that I'm hoping that we have someday. Because not only do we need to be concerned when we talk about a bill like this for students that might benefit, but we have 850,000 students in the state of Minnesota that need our support. And as we have the conversations moving forward with all of the bills, I'm hoping that we consider what's best for all 850,000 students and not create something that in the long run could actually become more detrimental to providing resources to those students. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions. Or
thank you. Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and appreciate the opportunity to offer a few comments. And we also appreciate Representative Krisha's willingness to have an ongoing dialogue with us. He's been very open to that. I really much, very much appreciate that. Three quick points. Number one, Madam Chair and members, we feel, and the Constitution bears, that your first obligation is to your public schools. And quite frankly, we do not think the state of Minnesota is meeting its constitutional obligation right now to provide a general and uniform system of public education. Number two, and this has been discussed already, so I'll be brief, but we do believe strongly that state taxpayers expect that schools or any institutions that receive taxpayer dollars will be held accountable for how those dollars are expended, and that they will be accessible to the public, meaning the entire public, all students. Finally, I would just point out that there is no research that supports, quite frankly, tax credits or vouchers. In fact, numerous studies have come to just the opposite conclusion that when you compare similar students, meaning students from similar demographic or socioeconomic background, that students from traditional public schools perform as well or better than their counterparts at charter or private schools. So I'll stop there. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kernquist. Welcome, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all elected school board members from around the state. MSBA has had a long-standing position that opposes any new legislation requiring education funds for non-public schools and opposes tuition tax credits for attendance at a private elementary and secondary school. This bill does impact public schools. The movement could be causing increased transportation costs, misaligned facility issues, inappropriate staffing patterns because of decreasing student numbers, and state mandates that make it very difficult to respond to the changes in student numbers who might want to participate in these programs. I'm going to give you a few lists today so you get sort of the feeling that public schools face that private schools don't. The first being, let's talk about some of the mandates that the legislature has put on schools. We must have a licensed teacher and administrator, conduct annual audits, have multiple public meetings to inform the public. We must bargain in good faith. We must meet layoff timelines. We must meet the world's best workforce requirements. We must fund elite pension funds. We must provide employee health insurance as dictated by law. We have data practices requirements that follow open meeting laws with state and federal special education requirements that presently give us a deficit of $800 million statewide. We have facility requirements. We are limited by the fees we can charge. We have to provide school buses to all students. We have to even have a certain number of acres for every school we build. And the legislature has also been very clear that if you are in a public school in Minnesota, there are some policies you must have by law. And let me give you, there are 33 of them. I'll see how fast I can say them. It's sort of like the Big Mac, only a little bit slower. We have to have equal educational opportunity. We have to have a policy on out-of-state travel by school board members, equal employment opportunity policies, disability non-discrimination policies, public and private personnel data, family and medical leave policies, expense reimbursement policies, harassment and violence policies, chemical use and abuse policies, drug-free workforce, drug-free school workforce, tobacco-free environments, workload limits on special education teachers, school weapons policies, search of student lockers, desks, personal possessions, and student person, student discipline policies, bullying prohibition policies, protection and privacy of pupil records, student medication policies, student disability non-discrimination policies, student sex non-discrimination policies, internet acceptable use and safety policy, hazing prohibition policies, the Pledge of Allegiance policy, the use of police officer and crisis teams to remove students with IEPs from school grounds policy, wellness policies, school district curriculum and instructional goal policies, curriculum development policies, and I will just take a pause, but there are 8 more policies. And the Education Policy Committee did a very nice job about talking about education outcomes. So in Minnesota, we've always been pretty proud in public schools that we offer a lot of various school options for our kids. In fact, by my count, we offer 28 different options for schooling. We have magnet schools, language immersion schools, project-based learning schools, accelerated learning schools, college preparation schools, career and technical schools, Montessori schools, military schools, work-based schools, place-based learning, open enrollment schools, PSEO schools, concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment, college in the schools, advanced placement, international baccalaureate, Project Lead the Way, 168 charter schools, homeschools, share time, online learning, graduation incentives, alternative schools, area learning centers, early mid-college schools, and presently provide some tax credits and tax deductions. One of the big things in this bill that really bothers us is the inflationary increase that would go along with the money. School districts have long, long begged for that opportunity that their general education would follow what the inflationary costs were for public schools, about $500 million. In this bill, we believe that private in-state or out-of-state inflation-adjusted tuition schools are not transparent or accountable to state and local achievement standards as our public schools are. The only transparency and method of accountability in this bill you'll find on the very last page, and it is measured by the number of students participating in the program. It would be nice if you gave us that same level. Lastly, local school board members from around the state view this bill as an attack on public schools. Members of my organization feel strongly that expanding tax credits and deductions to cover private school tuition and including an inflation adjustment for tuition is not a wise use of taxpayer funds. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Mr. Nolan?
Dr. Nolan.
Take this other chair. It's a little higher.
Bud Nolan, Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, representing 223 school districts across greater Minnesota, educating 237,000 students every day. Do the math. Our district size is just a little over 1,000, and this is districts basically a little further out from the 494 loop. For those of you who are in greater Minnesota, you'll understand that rural schools do more than simply educate students. For the metro folks, I'd encourage you to take a read when you're up taking vacation. The book's called Why Rural Schools Matter. It's a Harvard PhD study of two cases of schools in Arkansas, and one of its conclusions is that rural schools are a public place more encompassing than any church or civic organization that bring a community together. Schools lend the identity to keep the communities on the map. When they close, not much else remains. The message is starkly plain: no school, no community. Therefore, MRA prefers state tax policies to strengthen rural schools and their communities, not further dividing them by sending kids in different directions and even to neighboring states. In light of this, we oppose House File 386, which we see as a potential to encourage students to leave their rural community schools, therefore weakening both the school and community. Instead, we ask for ways that the formula can support rural school students, schools, and community. And, Madam Chair, if I may be permitted one more comment about A3. As a superintendent of both Eden Valley Watkins and Foley, I was instrumental in forming community foundations in those communities. They're associated now with the Central Minnesota Community Foundation. We made a deliberate decision in those communities to make community foundations because they bring the community together rather than establishing a school foundation. Should this bill go forward, if Representative Precia and your writers would adjust, how do you address those situations where the foundation serves both a community purpose and supporting scholarships and other events in schools? So a little technical issue on A3 there from a rural perspective.
I'll make
Thank
a note.
You.
Thank you, Dr. Mullen. We'll keep taking testimony as people want to come forward. Welcome, and please just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sarah McLaren, and I'm here today as a Minnesotan and a mother. And I'm here today on behalf of myself and my daughter, Eleanor. And I brought a picture of her so that the committee can see her. Eleanor is 6 years old, and she has autism spectrum disorder. She was diagnosed at 3 years old, and thanks to early intervention, through her school and private therapies, she is currently mainstreamed with supports and keeping up with grade-level curriculum at her neighborhood public school. She also likes the movie Frozen, giving checkups to her dolls, and being silly with her friends. My daughter will have a bright, productive future, but she's going to need supports. I'm here today because I, through personal experience and based on the way our society is structured right now, private schools do not need to support my daughter. They do not need to admit her. They do not need to provide her the support she needs to grow and thrive and be a productive Minnesotan, which I know she can do. I am concerned that this bill, while opening up choices for some Minnesotans, will actually offer no choices and fewer choices for my daughter. My daughter needs the tax money our public schools currently have because it will always be more expensive to educate my daughter due to her disability than her non-disabled peers. So I would urge this committee not to vote in favor. I'm sorry. not to vote in favor of House File 386, and I appreciate your attention, and I apologize for being emotional.
No need to apologize, Ms. McLaren. I would be the same talking about my daughter, so thank you for your testimony. Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education, and I'll be very, very brief. I want to apologize to Representative Trisha. I didn't get a chance to stop by your office and have a frank conversation, and I don't know how frank it would have been. But
I knew you were supporting me, so it was okay.
Schools for Equity and Education has had a longstanding traditional opposition to bills in this vein. Certainly want to commend Senator Representative Trisha and the other legislators came today with hard beliefs that strong beliefs that they have on this issue, but our beliefs are equally strong on the expenditure of public money, and we certainly want to get that out and get on the record of saying that. As for a special session, though, I would say that I'm supposed to go to Norway and sing with my church choir in June, and it may be the last church choir that's allowed to go over there once they hear me sing. So it's you might. So just keep that in mind. If you keep me here, church choirs will be able to go to Norway for beyond this. So thank you.
I may force you to do a preview, but we probably don't have time today. But thank you, Mr. Lindell. Any other folks in the public wishing to testify on this? I had one other name. Sorry, I need my glasses. Wintana Melikin? No? All right. Is there anyone else from the public here who wishes to testify on House File 386 as amended? All right. So, Representative Krisha, did you have... I kind of just let you present your amendment. Did you have any other comments you wanted to make? And then I'll go to committee.
I mean, I have one final comment I'll make right after questions, but so okay. I can stand for questions if we have any.
All right. Questions from members? I'm not seeing any, so your comments, Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. A very brief comment as I thought about this. And I think about all the people that have come to me for and against, the phone calls. This is not an anti-anything. I'm not anti-public schools. I'm not anti... I am pro-education. Those that have worked with me know that's where I come from. But I think there's one comment that sticks in my head, and Representative Mariani, thank you, my colleague. You always bring comments up that trip. And the one thing that I thought about is as I worked through the child protection system, and you work with all these cultures, you work with all these families and all these people, I hope that we don't continue to use... like the Native Americans or other groups as chips in a poker game. And so I'll leave us with this. Rabbi Brad Hirschfield, who I've read a number of his works, had a great piece that said, you don't have to be wrong for me to be right. And he asked a really good question there that just kind of is imprinted on my heart. Can we make room for other cultures and beliefs without negating our own? That's what I'm trying to do here. With that, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. Representative Debbie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Surprisingly brief so far. We did cover some of the waterfront on this bill, and I think you can thank Representative Knobloch for going before you because we covered a little bit more of the waterfront on the question of what should the state's role be towards private education. With his bill, and I think the testifiers we've gotten here today have done a good job of talking about the lack of transparency for the use of public dollars. I think we didn't touch this time, but the lack of the application of the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, the lack of application of the open meeting law to private schools. Representative Mariani visited on the issue of discrimination by private schools. The mom was very powerful in the discrimination that her daughter would experience at private schools. But I think what perhaps I would urge us to step back and explore with this bill is there's a lot of stuff that we measure in public schools. We measure the education level of the parents. We measure whether dad's got a solid, secure job. We measure whether the family has secure, stable housing. We measure the child's access to health insurance and health care.
to take care of their medical needs. We measure the parents' mental health and alcohol and drug use. We measure a whole lot of different stuff, and then some of the stuff that goes on in the school. And what this bill does is take money out of the general fund that could help that child access health care, help that family with the medical needs that they have, help that family with mental health care, help that family find stable and secure housing, really deal with not just the test scores, but the whole child and their family. And I think our unwillingness to see the whole child and all of their needs is a major shortcoming of the bill. The addition of the amendment actually exacerbates the problem of the differential of what schools can raise. You're offering a supersized tax credit to wealthy schools in wealthy communities to be able to raise even more money for their foundations and increase the disparity in resources between wealthy communities and lower income communities. A problem that is only increasing and yours would accelerate significantly. With that, Madam Chair, again, I would ask for a roll call on this bill as well. Thank you.
Calls been requested. Any other questions, comments? Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But Representative Dabney, are you suggesting that any refundable tax credit then would be taking away from education? Because we have a few of them.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Erickson, this is not any refundable tax credit. This is a supersized tax credit to corporations and individuals that will actually distort charitable giving in the state. I can give $100 to People Serving People, who was before this committee yesterday talking about 40 different school buses coming before their homeless shelter in downtown Minneapolis every morning to transport children to different schools, and I can get, by deducting that from my income, if I itemize 6 cents, 7 cents, 8 cents on the dollar back, maybe. Or I can give that same $100 to a foundation as structured in Representative Crusher's bill and get $70 back. Now, it doesn't take a calculator even, let alone a math degree or a CPA, to figure out that I'm better off giving the charitable monies I choose to for that foundation getting $70 back than it does giving to charitable organizations that run a food shelf for a hungry family, that provide affordable housing to a homeless family, that provide healthcare services, the van that does dental services to families that comes to schools and provides dental care for kids whose families can't afford it. It's a much better deal to do this, and will actually distort charitable giving in Minnesota, not just damaging those charities that serve children and families, but your VFW, your Rotary Club, even your church, unless perhaps the church also provides schooling, at which point the state is providing a 70% credit to subsidize the salaries of a priest or an imam or a nun or a rabbi or other religious personnel who are teaching in the school.
Well, Madam Chair, I would argue that we don't have proof of that, and this is for our children. And for those families that I have visited with who long to have another option. You heard Ms. Kelleher, enumerate all the options we have in the public sector, but we also have parents who yearn to have a different setting for their children, and we're not honoring that. And there's nothing that proves that this tax credit or any others that we heard today are going to be detrimental. We'll probably have more generous benefactors because of this addition. And I just don't understand, you know, why we have this divide when it's for our children and for all the other options that we could offer families, because this goes directly to our children.
Thank you. Representative Krisha?
20 seconds, because I don't want to get to vote. And just quickly, in Representative Krisha's bill, because I want to make sure, my father always asks that if nothing else, my name be pronounced as I go forward correctly. But I would just say to this bill, and there's lots of characterizations, but the characterization that I see is this is pre-tax dollars. These are people that can choose to use their dollars to fund the efforts of these wonderful community members who, at the heart of what they are just trying to help the kids that need it the most. So with that, can't we just make room for other cultures without negating our own? I would just take us back to that.
Thank you. Representative Sanstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I just want to put this back in perspective. We really have not talked about how this benefits kids educationally. When we've talked about this in previous committees, we've seen that there's not a standard that all providers are being held to. This is not about education. This is a bill about money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have to respond to that. This is about education. You saw the kids leaving. You've seen the test scores we've had up here. This is about, as the barber that came here that I can't wait to get my hair cut in his shop has said, if you knew where I came from, you would hurry this along. This is absolutely about that. And we may disagree on that, but this in my heart is where I come from.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. With that, Representative Moran.
I'll be done.
If we have one more hand that raises, we're going to have to come back, and I don't think we want to go there. So, Representative Moran.
So, the one of the things that I realize is about giving to a foundation that gets 70% back is that 70%. And so when I went on to the website, I can't remember the name of the school now, and they had like an abundance of foundation who was supporting that school. And they did it because it was probably the right thing. They wanted to support community. They wanted to support those schools, and they saw the benefit of it. They wasn't doing it because of a tax credit, right? And the thing about this is that it is not aligned with any accountability in this bill. We don't know where the dollars are going to, who they're going to, and where they're going. We just don't know. You know, not that we don't want kids to be successful and parents to have school choice, but this bill, you know, we're asking public schools to have all types of accountability, and we need to have that across the board with our dollars, with our tax dollars, and this bill just does not do that, and that is not okay.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to let that be the last word. A roll call has been requested. So with that, Representative Krisha renews his motion that House File 386, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Jennifer Loom.
Aye.
Representative Peggy Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Jim Dabney.
No.
Representative Dario Anselmo.
Aye.
Representative Sandra Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Tony Juergens.
Aye.
Representative Ron Krisha.
Aye.
Representative Carlos Mariani.
No.
Representative Paul Marquardt.
No.
Representative Rena Moran.
No.
Representative Mary Murphy.
No.
Representative Bud Nornes.
Aye.
Representative Roz Peterson.
Aye.
Representative John Poston.
Aye.
Representative Julie Sandston.
No.
Representative Peggy Scott.
Yes.
Representative Linda Slocum.
No.
Representative Dennis Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tama Tice.
Aye.
Representative Paul Thiessen.
Nope.
And then Anna Wills is excused.
Right. The motion vote is 12-8. The motion is approved, and the bill is on its way to taxes. Thank you, Representative Krisha. Committee for today is adjourned.